Hello, and welcome to the Zeitgeist 19 podcast, curating the spirit of now through the lens of art and sustainability. Your hosts are Farah Piriya-Cohen and Elizabeth Zhivkova. In this episode, we sit down with Refik Anadol, a pioneering artist and technologist working at the intersection of AI, architecture, and the natural world. His large-scale installations from the UN headquarters and the Serpentine Gallery to MoMA and the Guggenheim Bilbao turn raw data into something deeply human. We explore what he calls cognitive environments, immersive experiences built from memory, emotion, and machine learning, from rainforest collaborations and coral reef archives to quantum computing and the ethics of AI. This is a rare and personal reflection on the role of the artist in a time of rapid transformation. And we ask, in an age of vanishing ecosystems, can machines help us feel what we are losing before it disappears? Refik, thank you for joining us. Such an honor to have you here. Your work has touched so many different worlds, from museums to glaciers, from data to memory. And we're really looking forward to exploring not just what you create, but how you think. You've said that your art is about making the invisible visible. But your practice has moved far beyond just visualization. You now create immersive, emotional, and even cognitive environments, which, by the way, I would love for you to expand on. At this point, how do you define what you do? Is it still art, design, architecture, or something else entirely?
So thank you very much again, and thank you for inviting. I think I'm a media artist, I call myself, because this is a medium of like imagination that truly using every single medium available. And I think the title of media artist is not too, I will say, not as old as Renaissance, Michelangelo or Raphael, or, you know, we don't go maybe too back there. But I think the evolution of art is eventually evolved by, as McLuhan mentions, the medium become the message. And the medium in my case is anything and everything. So what I feel that the reason I think we have lots of mediums in life is technology, of course, after, you know, post-wars and, you know, eventually technology, having internet, web 1, 2, 3, you know, AI, of course, and quantum computation. It's clear that the world is changing. And I think I am super grateful that as a child, I was able to see super early days of computation through Commodore and you know, understand what a game means, 8 years old, program the machine to create the games. I feel that my understanding of life shaped through technology. So, and eventually I became an artist that are using these technologies to express my feelings and ideas and try to reflect life. And of course, I was super fortunate in Istanbul, where I'm originally from, I was able to work with one of the most amazing possibilities of data painting. 2008, when I coined the term in Istanbul in my class with a pioneer, I will say, an artist and a museum director, Peter Weibel, a curator. So it was this moment that I know that I will be using since that moment data as my primary, I guess, material. I also get in love, completely loving with light as a material. I feel like light is one of the most amazing material in humanity, which can be, of course, a divine material. It can be a material that can be particles and wavelengths in science. And at the end of the day, we need light to survive as humans, right? Our life and we need light to survive. So I found that light is a primary material and data my primary material. I blend them together for the pigmentation. And when I moved to Los Angeles to get my second degree with my partner, I knew that I need to like practice this field deeper, understand this like much conceptually, technologically, and decide to become a like an art and design studio and technology studio. So 10 years for me feels like 100 years level of innovation. But the idea behind the studio was always the same. I imagine to create art for anyone, everyone, any culture. I was trying to find kind of a language of humanity through data. And 10 years ago also, very fortunate, I became the first artist in residence at the Google's program. Me and my team learned how to use AI almost 10 years ago. So I believe these are incredibly inspiring moments that allow me to expand more and more. And also, I'm in love with architecture. I believe that every facade, wall, ceiling, floor can be a canvas. So I'm not like just, you know, imagine a, like a canvas of like a two-dimensional world. And I think that all became a body of work.
Rafik, you've just painted such a powerful picture of using data, light, and computation not just as tools, but as a language for expressing imagination and emotion. That brings me to something I've always been curious about, your raw materials. They range from climate models to machine memories, from coral reefs to old master paintings. How do you decide what belongs in your world? Is it aesthetic potential, emotional charge, or something less tangible?
I think it's really, there are multiple ways of, I think, our practice shaping by, of course, as an artist, the desire to find way of understanding data. Again, this can be anything and everything can be a machine, I guess, readable information that we can compute, we can measure. That's one thing. But also our collaborations, like over the years, I think we inspired many institutions, many pioneering scientists, from Nobel laureates to like many others. So now I have multiple ways. And also the museums. I mean, our work at the museums at the moment is primarily creating a positive impact. But I think one of the reasons I believe that this diversity brings a lot of possibilities to think about art. And I always think that, by the way, I am not coming from a traditional art training. I don't have a gallery representation. I am not in this, I will say, like a society of arts, if there's anything like that. So I try to get out of these molds and like, you know, I just don't believe that art can only survive in certain like conditions. I don't believe art can only be in a gallery or a museum. I just don't believe that art should be constrained in those like places. And each time I experimented in a public space, like Gaudí's Casa Batlló, the Sphere in Las Vegas, or, you know, Zaha Hadid buildings and Gaudí's, and I always, and Frank Gehry, I always try my very best to like get out of those bubbles where we think that art can only happen here, or art can only happen in these conditions. So that's a huge inspiration for me, that disruptive thinking of where the art should be for humanity and why it's not there yet. So those are like, you know, intellectual challenges of every single day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with your idea that art should push both physical and metaphysical boundaries, and that disruptive thinking is essential. Rafik, as you know, here at Zeitgeist 19, we operate at the intersection of art and sustainability, and the natural world is central to our work. Many of the data sets you've used come from nature, and your recent projects have made that more visible than ever. In Glacier Dreams, you worked with glacier monitoring data to create a powerful, immersive response to climate change. That was the piece I saw at Art Dubai in 2023, and we spoke briefly about it just before your panel talk. And then I had the chance to experience living archive nature at the Serpentine, which was absolutely breathtaking, especially the way it integrated rainforest data and your collaboration with indigenous communities. Could you tell us more about these projects and how you think about the environmental impact of large-scale digital installations like yours?
Absolutely. So, I mean, first of all, I think nature is always, but always in the human history, inspired artists. And we saw many, many, many pioneer minds experimented nature as an inspiration. One of my, I guess, huge inspirations is Monet. Claude Monet is, I think, one of those artists who, like, you know, literally, I think he used a new technology, I think, right? So he's in plain air painting. And he had his mixed tube paints. So I think he was trying to capture the pretty much the beauty of the natural world. So I also use the technology of our time, in this case, machine learning and data visualization, to capture the beauty and the complexity of the digital and natural worlds. So I think that I can argue that my work is in kind of a new form of that and plain air for the 21st century, right? Instead of going out into the landscape, I go into like a data sphere to capture the light and atmosphere of our collective experiences. So I believe nature is the most inspiring. Nature is the most intelligent. Nature is the most important thing we have as humanity. So many reasons I am in love with nature. I born in Istanbul next to Bosphorus. The life for me was water. So my work is always, you can see, fluid dynamics, and it's also coming from nature, of course. I'm in love with weather, like wind data, rain and snow. And like I have a huge love and respect for the natural phenomena around us. But I felt that in the age of like AI and data, we can reinterpret this beauty in a way that we can see different. So, of course, over the years, I did my very best with my team to like look at nature from the landscapes, national parks and water, flowers, clouds and oceans, and always trying new ways of seeing on corals, as you mentioned, and glaciers. So, but what I felt is especially more, I would say, affected is like a couple of years ago when the large language models started to appear, the world was shaking. And I started to use those models to look at if they know nature or not. While they feel like they know nature, but they were hallucinating. My work is about hallucination and dreams and fantasy, by the way. And I think as an artist, my hardest question is what is beyond reality? But in the meantime, I felt that it's interesting if the AI is coming, becoming super strong for humanity, a powerful force. I felt that why on earth nature is not really well framed. So I started with my team to work on a large nature model. And those exhibitions are kind of a part of that research. And I said that instead of, by the way, we didn't want to start a project unethical. Last 10 years, every single project we created, we collect our own data, train our own models. So I think our studio has a different compass, different path. We don't use commercial tools. We don't like practice with, you know, available tools, because I believe to create a unique work, you need your own model. You need your own data. That's the way of like creating a pigment for me. And what I found that is incredibly inspiring is what happens if we create an AI model from scratch by thinking in the first principles of nature. So that was the beginning part of it. And we receive 500 million images of nature. And I believe this is one of the largest data ever collected. And on top of it, we were uncomfortable about just being lazy and just finding data available. We traveled 16 rainforests and collect our own data. And that's, I think, where the things change, meaning the sound, the image, the text, pigments, weather data, you know, water flows of trees and incredible information of nature. And then I found that there's also people living in the data, in the nature, like Yavanawa people. So 5 years ago, I met with the chief Nishiwaka and the Putwani, an incredible Yavanawa people. And last 5 years, I'm going, coming a lot in the forest. And they are my mentors. I receive a special name from them. And it's my kind of a second family, I call them, a spiritual family or something like that we can call. But the idea is there is like really understand data, not from a boring mathematics, not from a, like a cold like information, but truly and honestly, what does it really mean to live in the nature? And how can I understand the nature better so I can create those practices much deeper and honest and really understanding with awareness? So that's my, I will say, compass, my practice with data and nature. And over the years, at Serpentine Galleries, we received 90,000 people. And now we are creating the world's first AI museum in Los Angeles called Dataland. So we are working very hard for this research. Oh, also at United Nations, thanks to the General Secretary, we were able to get our exhibition and AI model in the United Nations in last September as recognized the most ethical and sustainable AI in the world.
Rafiq, maybe I can jump in here. Thanks very much. And it's super illuminating because you basically introduced already my question. I saw your amazing work at the UN. If I'm not mistaken, it was about coral. And you sort of translated a bit the coral, right? And from our practice in One Ocean Foundation, it's about ocean conservancy. And you know, corals are many times referred to sort of as the rainforest in the ocean, right? With all the home to so many species, and that's why it's so incredibly important. How did you transfer basically like this reality into your impressive work at the UN? If you can tell me a little bit about that and how you went into this whole, like taking this data and how you basically transformed that.
Absolutely. So 2 years ago, World Economic Forum in Davos, there was a very important dialogue and discussion with the world leaders. And the topic was corals. And thanks to our curator, Joseph Fowler, he invited like, hey, like Refik, there's this issue, there's this topic. We have like, you know, coral issues and they are dying rapidly because of the, you know, the climate change, because of like, you know, our mess as humanity. We are creating absolutely problems for nature, obviously. And otherwise, corals will not die. I mean, they are like designed for, from the nature's first principle, should survive. But we somehow, our desire of using technology, our desire of like, you know, different form of energies, I believe, we start messing up nature. So he asked kindly to like, how can we bring the attention to world leaders and sit together and remember this issue? So it was amazing. Like 2 years ago, when we did the coral project, around 135 million underwater images. And with incredible researchers and, you know, biologists of the ocean biologists, we look at the data together. And it was a fascinating learning that, first of all, they're incredible creatures. They're beautiful. And I have this very basic understanding of life. If we love something, we don't hurt it. We just protect it. Super simple, super human, very basic expectation. I said, how can we make a beautiful work of art, take the attention of the world leaders and really bring them together and tell them as nice as possible, here is the beauty of it, but we are losing it. What do we do with it? Super simple. And I felt that this simplicity and honesty create an impact. In fact, we received amazing world leaders. We sit together, we discuss the issues, and we show them our AI model research. We show them the reports. And in a way that it's not like, you know, some boring, long, bureaucratic meetings, but more like a concise and honest and just straightforward, very clear talks about that. It was amazingly like, impactful. Like I saw the change of a world leader's face. I saw them like they took attention, they took notes. I saw them there writing emails. So I saw that it's possible truly to move people by art itself, take it as like a campfire, bring people together and just sit together and just talk about this issue. It's different than sitting on a, like a big, like rooms and like very traditional like setups and long papers and who knows who reads. So I think that didn't work. If that worked, this will not happen, obviously. So what I found myself is how to like bring these new dialogues, how to make people talk about it, think about it, without taking a finger pointing or making people guilty or feel negative, but feel positive and still get action, right? Get inspired. But that was the whole idea behind it. And I'm happy to say that I guess that worked. And the first World Economic Forum and then United Nations, I can count many more, but I'm happy to say that this technique works. Like this is, I think, an idea that feels very, oh, it's like a shiny pixels. No, it's not. So you see that? So to me, art is a mirror. So if you see nothing, it's okay. It's you seeing nothing. But at the end of the day, the idea behind it, the context, the discourse, the reason, the meaning, it exists, right? So I found that when you do it right, people see that. And I think that's what was it about. So I found that if it's working, then we apply to this idea to glaciers, then we apply to rainforest. Then, you know, it starts to create an impact, quantifiable impact, not just sugarcoating, not these shiny pixels or whatever Instagram, TikTok stuff, not like that. And we also tried also these ways of communication, I guess, not only art, right? Then we have podcasts like these and gatherings like that. I think this is a new ways of activism without really losing the attention, but still say how beautiful and important nature is, as simple as it can be.
Thank you, Refik. That was beautifully said. We appreciate that you're proactive in this field. And thanks for diving deeper into your practice and medium of data, telling us what drew you to working with nature data sets such as coral reefs, the ocean, and climate models. How do you define your artistic mission in terms of urgency?
I think, again, I want to hugely give credits to my mentor, such as Hans-Ulrich Obrist, one of the curators that I have a huge respect and who really shared a lot of insights. I feel like the world is changing so fast. And as I mentioned, in my lifetime, in 20 years, I saw all this innovation and discoveries. Robotics are coming. There's a Nobel laureate who cure protein. I mean, who most likely because of protein folding findings at DeepMind, Demis Hassabis and his team. Who knows what will they solve next couple of years? I think most likely in a year, in 2 years, we have the AGI coming, which is a super intelligence, right? Most likely will be superior than us. So we are on a very unique path for humanity. And I feel like it's more important than before to really understand what's happening in the world. So my work, I felt that, if you look at the history of arts, right? We don't know how Michelangelo, how Raphael does their masterpieces. We know that they are chasing greatness to make these incredible artworks. But in the age of AI and data, I believe we have to be more responsible because possibilities, AI means possibilities, and possibilities come with responsibilities. For nature, culture, space, science, education, climate issues, I think all of those topics are, to me, as important as they are. And I think it's all about articulation, explaining, sharing, sitting together around these issues. In the age of social media, our attention is going so low. Like there are algorithms looking for 3 seconds of success. A world like going low and low and low and low. And I feel like we have to be really careful about how do we take our attention to the things that we think is important. So those are my really honest, super clear responses to your question, nature, to any other issues in the world. I mean, we have wars and conflicts. I mean, obviously the world is not in the best shape. But at the end of the day, we as humans are resilient creatures. Like we survived for thousands of years. We find a way to get together in this planet. We found a way to invent technologies. We found a way to inspire each other, create hope, create joy, create inspiration. So I see myself in this path as an artist truly exploring these still the same human feelings, inspiration, joy, and hope, either nature or again, any other topics, neuroscience and architecture. I don't believe there's any difference if the idea itself is as clear as it can be. So I'm teaching last 10 years at UCLA, and I grew up with teachers in my family. I learned to learn very early ages, and I believe that's one of the fundamental rule of life. If you learn to learn very early, I think the life becomes relatively more fun, more easy. Of course, I don't think anything is easy. If anyone is pushing forward their mediums, ideas, and anyone who is chasing greatness in their life, when I say greatness, I'm not talking about egocentric stuff. I'm talking about like a better human, better life, better family, better teachers, better artists, better, just better humans. I feel like the more we talk about this, the more we remember this, from spirituality to emotions to like intellectual context, I think we just remember what does it mean to be a human. And by the way, the reason I'm also in love with AI practices is not necessarily I am just a techno, like loving a techno fetish, something. I am just enjoying finding human in non-human. And I think AI is a fascinating canvas to reflect who we are. Because AI is a mirror for humanity. It will exactly show who we are. It will exactly precisely tell us who we are. And I think if you remember that AI is a force, meaning if you blend with bad, a bad force. Blend with good, good force. Blend with creativity, it's a creative force. And I think the more I realize this, I think the more I understand, actually, this can be an incredible path for humanity. Again, need a lot of thinking, and not positive thinking, not wishful thinking, but a lot of thinking is needed. And then I think we may have an incredibly bright future for humanity.
You are already touching on it, but I'd love to stay with this for a moment. We're living through a time when AI, robotics, and emerging technologies are completely reshaping how we create, how we work, even how we think about intelligence itself. There is so much excitement around it, but also a lot of fear and uncertainty. Since you work so closely with these systems, I wonder, how do you see this moment? Do you think we're at risk or just beginning to grasp what's possible?
I think we are always in risk as humanity. I don't think there's a chance of no risk. But what I want to be clear about is AI is the most transformative technology ever happened in humanity. It's not like electricity. It's not like, I don't know, previous like discoveries or industrial revolution. It's a really, truly, honestly, humanity's path completely change. And this should be, I mean, I think we are in a renaissance altogether, I think, like in 400 or 500 years before when renaissance happened. I think it took so long for those people realize, I don't think even they realized they were in renaissance. But I think we were super, I think, fortunate. And I'm so grateful that we are realizing that we are living this moment. So I'm so grateful to be alive to witness this transformation of humanity. But again, at the end of the day, I always believe that what we leave behind as a memory is truly what does it mean to be human. I mean, the more, the better memories we can leave behind, I think the better the humanity can be. And again, to heal the, I guess to heal the world, we need to heal the mind. I mean, we are so basic expectation of life, I think. And if we apply, I think this expectation to our lives, either AI or robotics or whoever, whatever may come next, I think we'll be resilient. We will be just ready for it. So, of course, we will question what is reality. Of course, we will question what is creativity. We will question anything and everything with AI. And again, if we are ready for this intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, I think it will be a very powerful transformation for humanity. But we have to bring ethics. We have to be sure if AI means anyone, anything and everything, we have to be sure it's anyone for anyone and everyone. And if we apply those really, I guess, ethical approaches, AI doesn't have too much problems. Of course, in the bad hands, it will become bad. In the good hands, it will be good. In the great hands, it will be great. Like, it's all predictable. But I think if we apply those early alarm mechanisms, we can be in a very, very, in a very different space. We just need to be super aware about this technology as much as we can, talk as much as we can, and as be transparent as we can.
Thank you again, Rafiq, for taking the time in your extremely busy schedule to share your insights with us. It's been a real pleasure, and we are grateful for the depth and imagination you bring to this moment in art and technology.
Thank you so much. Grateful, and hope to host you in Data Land, in AI Museum in LA, whenever you need. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Have a wonderful day.
All right.
Day.
You too.
Congratulations. Thanks, Miriam.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this inspiring episode with Rafiq Anadol. His visionary work reminds us of the power of art, data, and technology to reshape how we perceive the world and even ourselves. As we continue exploring the interconnections of creativity, nature, and innovation, may we all be inspired to imagine new possibilities. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring.